Welcome to the Legal Nurse Podcast, where you'll get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside the legal nurse consulting business. They'll share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with over 30 years' experience. So join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's your host, Pat Iyer.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer, and this is Legal Nurse Podcast. The focus of our shows has been to help you as a legal nurse consultant in your business, in your role, and in your life as a legal nurse consultant, business owner, a child, parent, wife, whatever your roles may be, or husband. And today I wanted to take a focus of looking at wellness issues and specifically how we treat our bodies as entrepreneurs, as healthcare professionals, and how that factors in and influences how well you do in your business or in your role as a legal nurse consultant. I met our next speaker, Kevin Light, at a conference this summer when I was at the National Speakers Association and lost my voice. So when Kevin and I met, I actually couldn't speak. I was croaking and writing notes and smiling and trying to look as if I could talk, but I clearly couldn't. And he very graciously agreed to be on the show, even though we couldn't speak about the show at the time. Kevin is a graduate of Michigan State University, where he got a Bachelor's of Science degree in biochemistry, and he also earned an MBA from the University of Texas at Austin and went to medical school in Des Moines. He is a board-certified general surgeon. He's also served internationally with the U.S. Air Force for several years and went through the Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine. He's also a flight surgeon, so that means he was up in that really tiny little cockpit on several missions in fighter aircraft throughout the U.S. and Europe. And he was also part of the first surgical teams that were deployed in Saudi Arabia during the Operation Desert Storm. He received 2 Air Force Commendation Medals. And after Kevin left the Air Force, he trained in cosmetic surgery. He has a very active surgical practice in Dallas. He's also trained with the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine in the fields of anti-aging and functional medicine, and is a well-established expert in bioidentical hormone therapy, stress management, nutrition, and fitness. I have a copy of his newest book called Outsmart Aging, which is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Kevin graciously gave this to me when I met him this summer. So, Kevin, I know that going from a focus on cosmetic surgery to include a focus on anti-aging may seem like somewhat of an interesting connection. Can you tell us how you got interested in anti-aging?
Sure, Pat. And again, thanks for having me on the show. I love doing these because I love to talk. It fits perfectly because for years as a general surgeon and a trauma surgeon, I saw people on the inside when they got sick or were injured, and I actually saw what the wear and tear of a human body looks like inside. And then I go to cosmetic surgery, and I buff up the outside, you know, the effects of aging that you accumulate. And functional medicine or integrative medicine basically turns down the dial as to how fast you, quote, fall apart, how fast you age, how you age. And it addresses both how you feel and function as well as how fast you age externally. So I can actually turn down the gain on all of that. And it's the perfect tool for what I do.
I know that as a culture, we are fascinated with the concept of anti-aging. The most recent issue of AARP that I have next to me says, as one of the headlines, 31 proven anti-erasing secrets. You put that on the headline of a magazine, on the front cover, and, you know, I know my fingers immediately went to, all right, let's look at page 32 and see what are those secrets.
Right.
Have you found the fountain of youth that we've been looking for centuries?
Boy, I sure wish I had. That'd be a great thing to be able to build a business upon. But unfortunately, I've not found the fountain of youth, but I certainly have, not myself, but I've benefited from many of the leading minds in medical science today. Techniques, practices, things you can do on your own to vastly improve how your brain works, sexual function, how your body looks and feels, what your energy is like, how your memory, your executive decision-making processes, everything. The manner in which you age, the quality of life after age 50, all these things can be drastically tweaked and modified and altered based just on having an awareness and a knowledge of what's possible. A lot of people, they just surrender to the norm of how people age and, quote, fall apart after 50, and they don't realize that that doesn't have to be so. So now we have all this wonderful knowledge that is absolutely fascinating that everyone can employ and make a big difference in all aspects of their life.
When you were talking, I was thinking about the phrase, she looks older than her stated age. That's certainly not a term that we ever want to have applied to us.
No, it isn't. And unfortunately, in this culture, we glorify your appearance, especially for women. And that's just is what it is. And you can impact, I think it's more important to feel like you're 40 when you're 60 than look like you're 40 when you're 60. Ultimately, I think that is what really pays off and has value. But the nice thing about this medicine is that it impacts both how you feel and how you age. For example, there's several ladies I would see over my practice who at 32 or 35 would have early wrinkles, that leathery skin, didn't look healthy, had no energy. And these are the ladies who laid in the sun all the time, didn't eat the right foods and smoked cigarettes, versus a lady who was 62 years old, perfect skin, hardly a wrinkle, vibrant and fresh looking. It's night and day. And some of it is genes, but most of it is how you take care of yourself. And there's where the secrets, quote, come in, is the secrets of making that happen. It just doesn't happen. It's not just a good set of genes. It's mostly what you do to yourself or for yourself.
I think I've seen some of those ladies in Florida where I live in the wintertime who are tanned to the point of an extreme and look like they have been indeed spending their life living in the sun, laying in the sun.
Yeah, you got to wonder what they're thinking. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, particularly now since we know more about skin cancers and melanomas and basal cell cancers and how they relate to sun exposure. It certainly is something that I think the parents of young kids, are focused more on. I do see them on the beach, as an aside, spraying their kids with these suntan lotions, and I wonder about all that aerosol going into the child's lungs. I don't know if that's an issue at all, but I've thought about it.
It's a big issue. There's things called parabens. They estimate that there's 8,000 chemicals. Actually, there's 80,000 chemicals in our environment that we're exposed to almost on a daily basis, our soaps, our shampoos, our cleaning products, that are artificial, have never really been seen in nature before the last 50 years, have never truly been tested on humans, maybe a rat, maybe a mouse, maybe an animal, but they were extruded into our culture, into our society, and we are just surrounded by toxins everywhere we go. And there's really no way that you can run from it, but you can surely avoid it when you can. And things like suntan lotion, mosquito spray, that really bugs me. The bug spray off, toxic, toxic, toxic. Cleaning products, the new car smell.
Mm-hmm.
Our brain registers the new car smell or the new carpet smell in a house as being, you tie that emotionally with a new vehicle or a new carpet, but that stuff is just off-gassing of industrial vapors, and that stuff is toxic. So it's, you need to become aware of all the stuff out there knocking on your door, which are going to slowly chip away at you. And that's one perfect example that you gave, the beach thing.
Mm-hmm. I know that in the limited time that we have today to talk, that it would be helpful if our listeners could help you focus on what are two areas where we could have the most impact in terms of slowing down the effects of aging. What would be your first area that you would select?
Well, Pat, without question, it would be stress. Stress is the biggest and the baddest and the number one thing that chips people apart, and it does it very insidiously, and it does it over time. And they estimate that about 85% of all visits to primary care doctors are in some way directly related to stress. And the thing of it is that a lot of people look at stress as being mental. That stress is emotional stress, it's mental stress. But if you look at the totality of stress, whatever that means, a very small part of it is mental, because when you're stressed, you're secreting all these chemicals, all these toxic chemicals, that if you're stressed for weeks, months, and years, those chemicals have terrible effects on your system, on your physiology, and incite disease. So it's this prolonged, relentless stress button stuck on that really causes a big problem. And the reason that happens is because we live in a 24/7 cycled society now. There's increased demands on our time. Technology has done nothing but give us more time to pack more stuff into our day. So we're more stressed as a culture than ever before. And it's interesting that the number one stressor is jobs. Number one, hands down. And the thing that stresses us about jobs are two things: a sense of lack of control, and time demands or time management issues. So those are the big stressors in our life. And so stress leads to heart disease, diabetes, cancers, dementia, all these bad stuff. And if you can turn that stress switch off, which there are techniques to do, then it greatly improves your lot and the experiences you have in life. So I would start probably, if you had to start anywhere, it's with stress.
I spoke to a physician earlier today who was chief of a very busy unit in a hospital, and he said that he was never away from his job. Even on his hours that he was off, there were phone calls about problems, about problem patients. He said, I did it for 5 or 6 years, and it just wore me down. I was getting to the point that I was so burned out that I had to make a change. So he stepped down and is now working part-time, and he is just as happy as he can be.
You know, that's a great story, Pat, and that's what I advise my patients to do. There's several things. Stress is all perceptual, mostly perceptual. It's, there are physiologic stressors and environmental stressors, but most of stress is perceptual, which means it's the way you perceive the events around you. And if you can change those perceptions or change the way your day goes, you can really impact it significantly. And a lot of people have to learn or adopt the idea that they have to find a balance. What is truly important to you? I mean, do you really need to have that old work adage, especially with professionals in the medical field? My mom was a nurse. All my friends are doctors. You're a nurse. Most of the people listening are nurses. I mean, we have this ethic of burn and go, you know, just work. And I think that approach needs to be reexamined, because we think we get a gold star for being very productive and we got this great work ethic and we're blowers and goers, but ultimately, in many cases, if it's not making you happy, and if it's not doing anything but rewarding you financially, then life is short. You got to make the change, and you got to have the chutzpah to get up and do it. And that's the hard part.
In the legal nurse consulting world, there can be a couple of customers who bring in an inordinate amount of stress into that nurse's business. They are demanding, they are critical, they want special privileges. One of the things that we struggle with as nurses is that we've got this little invisible hook in us, which I think is in you as well, that says, oh, I can be helpful to you, let me help. And sometimes that means putting aside other priorities or the relaxation time in order to help the client, to help the attorney on the case. I've seen it in myself, and I also learned as I got more experienced in my business that I could say no to impossible demands. Is that part of stress management?
That's a big part of stress management. So rule number one or two is get rid of toxic persons, toxic places, or toxic things. And toxic persons, clients, just say no. They're not worth it. I break my clients down into A, B, and C clients. And once you become a C, you're on the chopping block because it's the whole 80-20 principle. And if you're bringing 20% of my business and you're 80% of my headaches, I'd rather live without you. I don't need that. And there's so many other things in life that I need to do besides maximize my clientele. I mean, that's a strong driver. We need to make a living. But it just isn't worth it. I mean, in the long run, it burns your juice. You need to hang on to that stuff because it's finite. And to let somebody come and suck you dry, you know, medical people, we like to help, like you mentioned, that hook. We like to do things. We like to enable and help. And we tend to, more than others, I think, let people suck us dry. And there becomes a point where you learn to just drop that wall down and go, nope, no more. And I'm done with you. And you have to be selfish. There's nothing wrong with being selfish in terms of keeping a balance. And I think that's different for everybody, but you just have to do it. Because you don't get a gold star for being the best in that game, because people will take and take and take until you just say no.
Setting limits sounds like an excellent strategy. What else could you suggest for us to deal with stress?
Well, I think what a lot of people also do, again, it's the lifestyle stuff. So 80% of everything is lifestyle. That includes stress. So things like, do you exercise? Okay, there's a new adage out that's sitting is the new smoking. Okay, so it's not necessarily you need to go out and be Arnold Schwarzenegger, but you need to move your body, get your muscles going, because it secretes chemicals that bathe your brain. Exercise is also better than kicking the dog. It's sort of an outlet for energy. And exercise is something as simple as walking for 20 minutes a day. That's all you need. Anything else is gravy. So exercise is good. Eating food that is healthy for you, and by unhealthy, I'm saying we eat a lot of toxic junk that is manufactured to light up our taste buds and to tweak our brain into joy. And a lot of this stuff that tweaks our brain is artificial or unhealthy for us. And a good example of how artificial many foods are, if you can take a package of something and you can bring it home from the store and put it on your pantry and then leave it there for 4 months and not touch it, and you can still open it and eat it, because the bacteria won't touch it, why are you eating it? You know, the common sense test. The stuff you put in your mouth, Hippocrates said, let thy food be thy medicine, and food is the most powerful thing or the most toxic thing you put into your system. So just eating well. You don't have to chew on celery all day. Just eating well is another big one. Getting your hormones balanced, a lot of controversy in the past about that, but that's all been cleared up. That was all bad science. Hormonal imbalances stress your body. They just cause, you know, when testosterone leaves the building, estrogen and progesterone and thyroid, when they go, then you're only going on 4 carburetors. And you're not at peak efficiency. You need to be walking around with the hormonal juice and power of someone who's 30 years old. Just because it's normal for 60 doesn't mean it's optimal. It's just normal for 60, so it's average. So you don't want to do that. And I think the other thing that is important is just being mindful. Pat, how many times I do this myself, you're having a conversation with somebody, you're looking at them straight in the eye, and you're shaking your head and nodding, but in the back of your head, you're carrying on 3 or 4 subtext conversations with yourself. You're solving little problems. You're not present. Mm-hmm. And people do that. But there's a peacefulness to just quit spinning all those plates, put them down, focus. It's almost like meditation. You sort of diffuse all that energy out. And it's just being present and just surrendering to the moment. That is a huge thing for stress.
Before we continue with my discussion, I want to share another resource of great information about stress management. I need to ask you a few questions. Do you think of yourself as a strong and capable person? Do you think you're above average in your ability to handle a crisis? Do you think you can keep working through tension and stress? One day, Ella Akkad, who is a nurse with a master's degree, found herself curled up on her sofa with a blanket over her head, trying to escape her crisis. Has this ever happened to you too? Ella learned how to reduce her tension, lose weight, and make better choices and love herself with the techniques that she shares in the program called Instant Stress Busters. In this program, you will discover how to instantly reduce your anxiety and think more clearly when tension arises. This program consists of an audio recording and transcript for only $9.97 at the link http://lnc.tips/stress. Get it today and start on using new techniques to reduce anxiety and tension. Let's get back to the program. I know that Time magazine earlier this year had a special issue on happiness, and they spent several articles talking about the benefits of meditation in terms of reducing stress.
What are your thoughts, Kevin, about the use of meditation for stress management?
Wow, that's a great question. I used to think meditation was a bunch of tree-hugging junk, and I'm here to tell you meditation is very powerful, and because now I know the physiology and biochemistry behind it. And for the nurses out there who know all the anatomy, think about it. When you sit there, what is meditation? You empty your brain of all thoughts and you concentrate on breathing or some other mechanism, and you're taking these nice, long, deep breaths, and you're massaging that vagus nerve. Okay? And the vagus nerve goes to the parasympathetic, the vegetative, the calm, cool, and collected part of the brain, and it lights it up like a candle, and it turns down the tone and the gain on the sympathetic, which is your monkey brain, run from the predator side, and it really helps reset your mood. And it's funny that you don't need to be sitting on a rock on a mountaintop for an hour. You need 5 minutes in a quiet space. You can do it at work. You can just sneak off and be by yourself for as little as 5 minutes. And if anybody's tried meditation, 5 minutes at first seems like a lifetime. I mean, it's a long time. But it is a very powerful technique amongst other mind things like mindfulness that you can do to just turn down the busy chatter in your head. And it really, really works, and there's really physiology behind it. So I'm a big proponent of meditation.
It sounds like a practice that's easy to learn as well and doesn't require any special equipment or any special location or any special clothing. It can be done by anyone with a little bit of practice and learning how to clear out your brain.
And you would think that 5 minutes is a drop in the bucket, and it's a big deal if you do it regularly, and if obviously longer is even better, but just 5 minutes, it just turns down the tone, and it keeps turned down for a good part of the day, and maybe that's all you need. So yeah, it's cheap, it's easy, you don't have to go far. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, we started this last question with, if you had to pick two areas where we could have the most impact, which would they be? We've talked about stress management. What's your second area?
sleep.
Yes,
we are a sleep-deprived culture. We don't sleep. In fact, there's actually a glorification for not sleeping. I don't need sleep. I'm a super mom, a super dad, a super employee. I'll work all day, then I'll bring home work all night and shut everything down at 11, get up the next day, rinse and repeat. And that is a big problem. And the new science, it's not really that new, but the science on sleep says that whether you can get by on, you know, the people used to brag in college, I can get by on 3 hours of sleep. I only need 4 hours of sleep. Well, it turns out that everybody, no matter who you are, you need 7 to 9 hours of sleep, period, dot. And just because you can get by on less, you're really not getting by on less. And here's what they found. They did studies on fighter pilots, and the military spent lots of money on it, and they found out that anything less than 6.5 to 7 hours a night of uninterrupted REM sleep, that's deep sleep, leaves you cognitively impaired. If you're not getting at least 6.5 to 7 hours of sleep a night, you are cognitively impaired. You're not functioning to full capacity. And your executive decision making, your memory, all of that is impaired. And sleep also feeds into stress. One of the biggest stressors is prolonged lack of sleep. So it's like a rat on a cycle going round and round and round. And so sleep impacts, I see it impacting more and more and more of my people, and they just don't realize the importance. When you're in REM sleep, which is the deep sleep in the middle of the night, that's when all your growth and repair happens. During the day, you're busy, and the cleaning crew is taking a nap, and they wait till you go to sleep so they can come out of their little houses and go fix your brain, do all the growth and repair in your heart and your lungs, and also tend to your psychology. Deep sleep is important to sort of sort out your emotions and your psychology. So it's critical in all things. And anything less than 6.5 to 7 hours, you're fooling yourself. You just don't know it yet.
Well, a couple of points that you made are particularly relevant to our audience, because Legal Nurse Consulting is analytical work. It's detail-oriented. It's focused on the big picture, but also finding the little things in a medical record that make a difference. If we're not sleeping enough and we're cognitively impaired, that's going to impact on what we do to help our clients.
Right, and I'll bet you a lot of your client, the people listening, didn't really think it was that big of a deal. I mean, as long as they can feel, well, I got energy and, you know, I'm doing okay, I think they don't know what they don't know, especially, unfortunately, in our culture, mothers. You have mothers who have many more roles than many men. It's not universal, but she's the professional, she's the mother, she's the wife, she's this, she's that, and she tends to shoulder the burden a lot more than maybe the male counterparts do, for better or for worse. It just is what I've seen in my life. And they become super women, and they go, and the first thing to go for either men or women, the first thing to go when stress starts to raise its ugly head is sleep. Either you can't get to sleep, or you wake up in the middle of the night blinking at the ceiling going through your list. And so you get into this cycle of not sleeping, and it's very common as people get older and older and older, because life is a series of accumulated stress events. Their sleep gets more and more and more impaired, and it really wears you down over time, and it's one of the biggest causes or contributors. Again, the whole list goes on. It rinse and repeat. Diabetes, heart disease, dementia, even cancer. Chronic sleep deprivation impairs your immune system, which lets those little cancer cells slip by unnoticed, and now we're off to the races. So it's a big, big deal.
I'm sure this is a subject that has affected you as well, because you were in medical school at a time when there were no limits on how many hours in a row a physician could be working. Interns were routinely working 36, 48 hours in a row without being able to sleep. We see from the medical malpractice, medical error part of the world that when you're fatigued as a healthcare provider, you're not thinking properly, you're not making good decisions. You know that comparison of if you've been awake for 24 hours, it's like having a blood alcohol level that is legally intoxicated. Mm-hmm. You know, what are your thoughts about how that impacts the practice of healthcare professionals when they're not getting enough sleep?
They've done several studies on that. There was a not too old study where they studied medical students who had to be on call 24 to 36 hours, and they found out that the medical decision errors made by that group of people went up something like 120%. I mean, it's outrageous. And I trained in a trauma environment, so we were up at 3 o'clock in the morning doing gunshot wounds in Los Angeles. And, I mean, and we'd go 36 hours not, I mean, working round the clock and then come get 24 hours off and come back for another 36. It was crazy. And I was young and healthy, and it really wore me down. But, you know, that's the bravado, I can take it, coach, kind of mentality. And I think that's been one of the driving forces. Now you'll find that surgical residents are limited in how many hours a week they can work. And I think that should spill into all aspects of healthcare, the nursing profession, or anything related to the medical field. Again, there's that bravado, and we are producers, and they got to get away from that mentality. The biggest reason I left general surgery is because I looked 10 years down the road, and I saw the writing on the wall. General surgeons, for example, you know, they turn 65 and retire, and then they go down the hill, most of them, in my experience. I didn't want that, and the stress and the demands of my time was so intense that I wanted to be a little more selfish and enjoy life, enjoy my kids. So I just stopped doing general surgery and went into cosmetic surgery, which is all cash, 9 to 5, no holidays, and I can pick my clients. I don't even have to court someone to get a referral. I mean, it's perfect for me, but that takes a lot of that's rolling the dice, I guess I have to say. It's rolling the dice when you sort of do an about face like that and change, but I think you got to do it. You got to find whatever that balance is, because you only get one shot at this, and you have to take care of you. You have the tools to take care of you, and you have to listen to your inner voice and just do it.
Well, can you give us some tips about the people who lay in bed and they can't shut their brain off, myself included? Mm-hmm. I'm in this category, and you're reliving the day, you're thinking about your to-do lists. It's so tempting to get up and take a sleeping pill at that point. Mm-hmm. How can we break that cycle of closing down the brain so that you can sleep naturally without relying on chemicals or alcohol or any other substances?
It's a field called sleep hygiene. And little things you can do, for example, is give your brain permission to turn off. So you can take a legal pad, and you can write down 5 or 10 things that you must attend to tomorrow. And you take that legal pad and put it right in the middle of your bedroom floor. And then you give your brain permission to turn off, because it's there, you got it, you'll wake up, you'll see it. So check out. So you don't have to sit there and spin the plates. That's one. Another is do what's called an electronic curfew. So, but computer screens and cell phones, televisions, they emit a high amount of blue wavelength light. And blue wavelength is morning light. Evening light is a little yellow. And your brain sees these blue wavelength light devices at 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. And it interprets it as, hey, it's morning, let's go ahead, get up and go kill something, right? It's an ancient pathway. But what that blue light does is it suppresses melatonin. And it lights up the centers in your brain that says, time to get up and go get about your day. Confuses your brain. So what you need to do is you need to turn that interruption off, 7 o'clock, 8 at the latest, and then you're done. There's no looking at emails, no text. Put your phone in another room. Don't be looking at your phone. If you wake up and you're staring, don't get up and look at your phone, because you just took another big hit to your pineal gland, and melatonin just shuts off. So the whole electronic thing is a big, big deal. You don't want to have anything sweet before you go to bed, because you'll have a sugar drop around 2 or 3 in the morning, and that'll wake you up. You want to avoid alcohol because you can't go into REM sleep with alcohol on board. A lot of people don't know that. You want to make sure that your partner isn't snoring, your cat's not in bed with you bugging you. You got to make the environment as good as you can to fall asleep, and you need to stack the deck. And that's usually pretty beneficial. The biggest reason for people for not sleeping is because they're running from lions, tigers, and bears. That stress button is on. And that's where you need to target all your efforts, is just overall knocking down that stress, because the mechanism of stress is protective. And you're looking over your shoulder looking for a predator, and the last thing you want to do when you're running from a predator is to get tired and fall asleep. So that sleep thing is by design turned off. You're alert. You're looking for the threat. You're not going to go to sleep. So you got to address it. It's kind of like foreplay. You know, you got to be thinking about this 8 hours before the event happens. And so the sleep thing, you got to set it up, and you got to set it up and put a lot of thought into it, so that you can, especially if it's a problem for you, so that you can finally fall asleep, and then you reestablish that habit.
You've covered the intertwining of stress and sleep. I think you're right. Those are aspects of your life that affect everything else, because if you don't get enough sleep, you're also prone to reaching for the caffeine or reaching for the sugar to help give you the jolt that you need in order to start your day, and that ties into unhealthy eating habits and feeling sluggish and not wanting to exercise, and they're all intertwined.
You're right. In my book, I have a chapter on sleep, and I call it the redheaded stepchild of wellness, because people just they ignore it, or it's really not that important. The same with stress. Stress, schmesh. I mean, it's critical. It's the number one and two problems, and it's so discounted in our culture. It's and therefore, if you don't know or aren't aware, you'll continue to suffer from it. But hopefully, I've sort of put the spotlight on those issues for some of the listeners, and they can take some steps to take control.
And your book, again, is Outsmart Aging by Kevin Light, spelled L-I-G-H-T, just like the bright light that you're not supposed to have in front of your face at night.
That's right.
That digital light.
That digital
Thank
light.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your expertise and helping our listeners by pointing out some of the ways that we can bring more health into our lives.
Well, thanks for having me, and I'll come back anytime. Appreciate it.
Terrific. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this show. This has been Legal Nurse Podcast, speaking with Kevin Light about anti-aging and some of the patterns that we have in our lives that we need to examine and look for healthier alternatives. Thanks for listening, and thank you again for being on the show, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thanks for being a part of this program. Check out our online training and books at LegalNurseBusiness.com. Expand your LNC skills with our resources. Also, explore coaching with me at LNCAcademy.com to get more clients, make more money, and avoid expensive mistakes. And finally, join our continuing education program and get monthly trainings at LNCCEU.com. You'll get 2 online trainings each month designed to deepen your knowledge and skills. And look forward to having you tune into our programs again next week. Use the code LISTENED to get a 25% discount on this product. You'll put that code LISTENED in the coupon code box during checkout.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on iTunes. We always are interested in your ideas for new topics. Please leave a comment on LegalNursePodcasts.com. Join our community and get notified of each new episode and receive the transcript of today's program. complete the request form on legalnursepodcasts.com. We appreciate you and your interest.